Dr. Lynn Kitai saw the Phoenix Lights on more than one occasion and was always handy with a camera. That's part of the core work that goes into both the book and the DVD. You can link up to her website through ours at coasttocoastam.com. Your questions and comments on that, your experiences that night, should you have had them. And then I want to go back to something that had come up earlier. We just hadn't had a chance to reconnect on it. The spiritual side of this. And what exactly does that mean? How does an experience like this with the Phoenix Lights change Dr. Lynn Kitai's understanding of what religion is about or what traditional faith systems are about? Coming up next, along with your calls on Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Before we get to the phones, and I know there are many people who are hanging on right now, Dr. Lynn Kitai, would you address that question about how your experience with the Phoenix Lights have informed or defined your understanding of, say, an otherworldly divine religious experience?
You know what? I don't go there. To me, this is spiritual. I think spirituality transcends all religions and actually unifies all religions. And that seems to be a consistent point that is really stressed by people that have had these experiences, that their life is now transformed to the positive. They're much more aware of the environment, of their fellow man, how they take care of the earth. And it's changed people's lives dramatically. I mean, we have people now that have had the Phoenix Lights experience that are going forward with peace movements and with helping the environment and those things. So as far as spirituality goes, it touches people to the core. And it's not just unexplained aerial phenomena. It's also other unexplained phenomena like near-death experiences that people come back transformed in a positive way, knowing that love and knowledge are the only things that we take with us when we leave this earthly plane, and that they want to do the best they can and the most they can to help make this planet and the people around them better and make this a better world.
That's very much an answer. And I've interviewed people who a lot of near-death experiences over the years, and people do talk about how it changes their perspective on, you know, on what they had always thought to be true, and in such a way that in some people some people stopped going to church or synagogue or wherever they were worshiping, but other people started afterward because it made them not in a scary way where they're like, oh my God, I gotta go, but in a sense it sort of reinvigorated the idea that there's something else out there, something that they may have shut down their mind to, and suddenly they were feeling different about that. Let's go to Chuck in Wichita, Kansas, on Coast to Coast for Dr. Lynn Kitai on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Chuck.
Lynn, hello, Ann. I just wanted to mention something. I was in Apache Junction, Arizona, 35 miles from Phoenix in July of 1966. And I'd been in there once before in the Superstition Mountains, and I'd got out there late, so I didn't want to go in that night. And the fellow I was going to meet back in there, he's kind of a hermit, been back in there about 20 years, and he parked his car in the parking area at the western end of the range. And he told me if I got out there late, I'd just sleep in his car and come in the next morning. So I decided to do that, and I got in the back seat, and it's about 2:30 in the morning. I heard this noise, and it sounded like a large group of people chanting, and it was coming from Black Mesa, a mountain about 5 miles from where I was located, and I thought it was kind of strange. This is Apache country up in there. They consider it their home of the thunder gods, and this is a real sacred mountain for them. Anyway, all of a sudden, I saw this white circular orb come up over Black Mesa and got pretty large, and I thought it was the moon coming up at that time of night. It's a real dark night, and it hovered there for, maybe 10 minutes or so, and I got the feeling that whoever was located located in that area was trying to know what I was thinking. So I tried to blank my mind out, and all of a sudden a beam hit the back wall from where the car was parked and shown on the wall. And anyway, this thing raised clear up, and then it took off and came directly at me, probably within 300 yards at a pretty fast pace, and did a very sharp right-angle turn and disappeared in a flash. And it just scared the hell out of me. But right after that, I saw four figures. I couldn't outline their body or anything directly, but they moved toward the car. And they said, come with us. We're not going to harm you. And I got out of the car, and I walked with them, and I don't remember how far it was or anything, but we approached a saucer-type disc,
right.
And it had a beam of light shining down like a gangway, and that was the entrance into the thing. You just got in the beam of light. They took them aboard. And they, there was four of them, and they walked me towards the control panel. And on the way, we saw a woman laying in an operating table. We had a sheet over her. It appeared to be unconscious anyway.
Hey, and, Chuck, I got to jump in here because your radio in the background is echoing back, and it's driving me fairly crazy. But let me – is there a question or – is something that in order to connect with our guest on this, Chuck?
And she mentioned, I never told anybody about this, but she mentioned the Gila Indians, you know, and the way they reacted.
Yeah.
And when I went in the next day and I talked to this fellow that camped in there, he said, I've seen several things like that since I've been out here. And I just think there may be a connection, Indian connection there.
Okay. I like that. Thank you. Dr. Lynn, on the Indian connection, why would we think that there would be a connection over the Native American reservations?
Besides the fact that it's sacred ground to begin with, their cultures, I mean, I think we really do have something to learn from them and to take heed of their cultures. And it's not just here, it's around the world. I mean, there are indigenous cultures around the world that believe that they are in communication with other intelligences, and they invite them. And I know that the Superstition Mountains, I've heard from a number of people that have had sightings in that area. So perhaps that's a hot spot as well.
Margo, west of the Rockies, San Diego, for Dr. Lynn Kitai on Coast to Coast. Margo?
Oh, Ian, a pleasure to talk with you and Dr. Kitai. I am a psychological PhD and analytical chemist. Excuse me, I've had a stroke recently. I have a question for you. Something occurred in the 60s over LAX that my brother and myself, I was at that time working as an analytical chemist, and their neighbor all witnessed. I was living on La Cienega in Los Angeles, and we looked up, and this was just a little east of LAX. There was one huge mothership with lights going circular around a smaller area at the bottom. There were three triangles in formation, flying in formation away from LAX. And my brother called me down to see better on the ground, which I did. And it was magnificent to see these three triangles go in formation to the mothership and then instantly disappear. Mm-hmm. Just boom. And I wanted to ask you if you knew about this. This was in the 60s.
Okay. I'm so glad that you called and you shared that, because there are a number of similar stories through the years. In fact, recent ones that I talk about in the book at the O'Hare, Chicago O'Hare right. sighting, and as well at Tinley Park sightings. These are happening worldwide, and the Stephenville, Texas sightings, January of 2008, very similar sightings. In fact, if you go on the photo page in my book, I also collect sunsets, and I happen to take two different rolls are the same object, the cigar-shaped object, maybe a mothership, whatever, or the side of the Phoenix Lights, one of the Phoenix Lights craft that I did not see when I was taking the picture, but they're in the negative. So these things are around. They seem to be around, and we get glimpses of them if we're open to them or invited.
Very interesting. Let me go to Mark in North Carolina on a wild card line for Dr. Lynn Kitai on Coast to Coast. Mark?
How you doing, Ian? And Dr., fabulous show again.
Thank you.
I have a question. I was listening to Art's rebroadcast of his show when he was interviewing the councilwoman,
mm-hmm.
and he said that the day the so-called flares appeared, that there was two defined events. The one was the giant boomerang-shaped object, and the other was the so-called flares appearing. Is that your experience, too, that it was like two separate events?
That is such a misnomer and misinformation that was really put out there by the military, and not to say that there weren't flares being dropped, but the only photographic evidence. There were a couple of grainy videos earlier that night, and again, this was many, many hours. The bulk of the reports came in between the 8 and the 10 o'clock hour, but there were many sightings before and after of the same phenomena. But because the only true photographic evidence was around 10 o'clock, the lights that you've probably seen, the footage you've probably seen of the boomerang and of the arrowhead formation, and mine are the three points of light like a giant triangle. And keep in mind, again, that was in Class B restricted airspace, okay? They were not flares. We're actually doing an intensive investigation that we'll be publishing. A number of the scientists are now getting together, because this has been very frustrating for the people that know that these, at least the arrowhead and my footage, were definitely not flares. But it's been put out there for so long, and this is, you know, the debunkers just are joyous to jump on this. The only real hard evidence that is available during the mass sighting, because a lot of people tried to take pictures of the massive craft, but it blocked out the stars, and the pictures turned out black. So many people were unsuccessful in doing so. But the handful of videos that turned out that you probably have seen in some of the shows and so forth and the news are really the only thing that they could debunk, and they certainly have tried to do that. So it wasn't one or two events. There were many events, and there were many things going on at the same time. And again, I would ask you to take a look at the website, because the GAP project, the Geospatial Animation Project, is so refined and so special, because it's 12 years of compilation of many, many hundreds of reports to show people what these craft look like. And when you see that, you know, firsthand, you just know that the flare thing is just so ridiculous. So, go ahead.
Mark, was that your point? I didn't hear you defending the flares. I just, like, were you?
Oh no.
Yeah.
My point is that it all smacks of like some type of government operation. In other words, they've always wanted to affect like masses of people. You heard that, like that God's voice in your head that they were experimenting with, like during the Iraq invasion stuff. And since the 1920s, the Soviets were investigating beaming like motion pictures on the clouds with their giant 20s aircraft that they have, that some aviation buffs might be familiar with, for propaganda purposes or to just affect masses of people. And to me, it seems the most likely thing is either like a black project where it might not, just because it's visual, it might not be real. It might be something the government's projecting and testing on, you know, just to see if they can affect a massive bunch of people. and then do the flare thing. And I think it would probably be something very non-standard with the flares, so it wouldn't appear like flares,
okay.
Just to give them an out.
Well, you know what? I would feed into that too, except that I saw it up close and personal myself.
Right.
So, you know, that only, and that's why I would implore you to read the book, because there's so much data to the contrary, and that's why I had to come forward with it. That it just makes that entire idea, you know, not only concerning if it is. Government. And hey, again, I'm open. I mean, if it's them doing this, why did they do it over a populated, the most populated corridor of Arizona, when thousands of people were purposely looking up at the sky at the Hale-Bopp Comet? Whoever did this wanted to be seen. And as the military pilot says, why would they put out something that's stealth and then right. turn the lights on? It just doesn't make sense.
What do you suspect the government knows? What is it that you think they have it in a file? And at what level of government do you think somebody knows the truth?
You know what? The government has a job to do. And I really don't even go there, because that's why it's important to get this data out there. It speaks for itself. People can learn for themselves. This is going to be a grassroots effort. Disclosure, in my own personal opinion, is going to happen when enough people see things and experience things that they know in their heart of hearts is real, and certainly is science progresses, and I really hope science comes on board and really takes this seriously as a science question, then we can move forward and get this out in the open and talk about it and analyze it and move forward in our own evolution.
Mike is in Livermore, California, on Coast to Coast, on a wild card line for Dr. Lynn Kitai. Mike?
Good morning, Ian. Good morning, Dr. Kitai.
Hi.
This is kind of twofold. I had a question and then a suggestion. The question was, has any agencies, government or otherwise, come forward and tried to suppress this with you or threaten you or in any way? And then the other thing was, just as you just said, that this is a grassroots effort, there's a theater out here in the Bay Area that's running documentaries on a lot of stuff that pertain to what Coast to Coast listeners listen to, and I've given the producer my number, and if I could get your number, I can hook you up with them, and it gets to some people that are really interested in this stuff.
Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for saying that, because that's where this is going to happen. That's why I'm doing the curriculum as well. I mean, it's there's a chunk of history missing from our history books, and more people want to learn about this. And now it's really important to share all the different anomalous happening so that we can evaluate it in a logical way and really judge for ourselves, everybody in their own time.
Very good. And thank you, everybody. You know, so many interesting personal experiences and questions, and we'll do the best we can. If not, of course, you can always hook up with Dr. Lynn Kitai's work by going to coasttocoastam.com and clicking under the links following from there. If you go to the blog tonight on the same website, I put up an explanation of from the first hour from Dr. Charles Pellegrino, but also a couple of links that I thought were entertaining, including something that happened to me in the last week or so, and I shared those on the blog. In the meantime, 1.5 hour left to go with Dr. Lynn Kitai. We'll take your questions, your comments about the Phoenix Lights experience and what she is doing after that to try to beat the bushes for other skeptics to come forward who are now believers on Coast to Coast. Dr. Lynn Kitai had a life-changing experience on the Phoenix Lights. You can see the photos that she took. You can find those both in her book, and they get a sample of them at coasttocoastam.com. What about you and the Phoenix Lights next on Coast to Coast? This is Ian Punnett. Let's get to Earl in Phoenix on Coast to Coast AM for Dr. Lynn Kitai. Earl?
Evening, Dr. Kitai. Evening, Ian.
Good evening.
Yeah, I wanted to relay a little experience I had and then follow up with a question. I'm a retired airline pilot, And I live in Phoenix in the Ahwatukee area, right by South Mountain and just east of Australia Mountain. And in October of 2007, at 10 o'clock in the morning, clear blue Arizona sky, I happened to look up and I saw something that was starting to appear, and it looked like a faint white speck. And I thought, well, it's probably a weather balloon because they were having forest fires in San Diego, California. And I know they had sent up some rad suns, but it became brighter. And I looked at the sun and I said, that shouldn't be reflecting like that. And then another one appeared and yet another one. And all three of them transcribed an equilateral triangle. And I sat there just in amazement. As yet another one appeared, two more, and then there were two equilateral triangles, and then yet another one, and then finally three. So they had three groupings of equilateral triangles that made a larger grouping of one big equilateral triangle. And I could see through it into the blue sky still. It was, again, broad daylight. And I sat there and marveled at this, and I thought, well, let's walk over a tree, and I made sure that it was motionless, and I knew that there were winds aloft that day. And I was trying to figure out, I wonder how loud that thing is, and what could it possibly be? And about that time, an amber orb appeared near the first grouping that showed up, and it started to interact with those three. It looked almost like it was tending to them in some way. And then sequentially, two more amber orbs appeared and had some relationship to the respective groupings of the three. Within 11 minutes or so, they started to wink out, and I was just totally amazed. I hadn't really delved into the Phoenix lights until that point. I certainly know a whole lot about the flares in Arizona, and now that's nowhere near the Goldwater Range. And listening to the show, sometimes I've heard Zechariah Sitchin talk about reinterpretation of ancient Sumerian scripts and things that were talked about, like chariots of fire, that maybe had some basis in more physical reality. And I liked when Dr. Kitai brought up about talking about Michio Kaku, and I think he's identified, or they have, the physicists like that, at least 11 dimensions. I guess my question is more directed at Ian, and I'm aware that you're an ordained minister. And how do you think this correlates with words that are ascribed to Jesus, something along the lines of, in my Father's house there are many mansions?
Well, that's an often discussed piece of scripture about, exactly what that means depends on your interpretation. But it certainly, for some people, it implies great inclusivity, that there's a place for everybody, that there may even be, even though followers of Jesus would think that they would be the only ones, that there's room, for other different types of belief systems. So that's how it's often thought of. And if you're thinking about it in terms of an extraterrestrial sense, and that there are, there are other chambers, or that there are other dimensions, I hadn't really thought about it that way before. So intriguing thought. Thanks for the thought on that. Dr. Lynn Kitai, what do you thought on, at least on what the other party was talking about the portals and dimensions, and have we addressed that sufficiently?
I think that, we really need to look at the whole picture, and also, the Vatican just this past year has been coming out with their own announcements. They had actually a meeting, a 5-day conference on astrobiology, where scientists convened to discuss the detection and implications of extraterrestrial life and mm-hmm. possibility that life could be everywhere. And even Dr. Paul Davies, a very noted astrophysicist, has also been saying now that, it's possible that these microbes could be, getting a ride on asteroids and coming here, and there could be actually, like we have a tree of life, there could be other trees of life. There could be a whole forest of life. So there could be life everywhere. We know that that amino acids are out in space, and life is very tenable here. We're just finding life here, not only in the hot springs of Yellowstone and the cold Arctic lake, right, frozen Arctic lakes, but in the depths of the ocean. So, I think the Vatican is even saying that if God created us, why can't he create other life as well?
God is the God of the whole universe. Dave is in Michigan on Coast to Coast for Dr. Lynn Kitai. Dave?
Hi. Do you think that it's possible that the ships are being seen more frequently is because maybe the things that are going on the Earth and you know, with the volcanoes and the earthquakes, the wars, everything else, do you think that maybe they're here to maybe watch us or help us or save us from ourselves?
I think you're right on. I think that it's happening at a much more frequent pace. We're seeing this around the world, whether it's because we're recognizing it more or we're open to it more. I think the mass consciousness is changing, and we are evolving, and we know our DNA is evolving, and all the things that are happening here around the world, particularly, as I mentioned earlier, people are coming back from these experiences, near-death experience, out-of-body experience, unexplained aerial phenomena, with a very strong message to wake up to what we're doing to ourselves and our planet before it's too late. I think we really have a choice here, and whoever is visiting us is really trying to inspire us to go on the right road and to wake up to what we're doing and to tap into the goodness that we have inside of us to make this a better world.
Bob on the first time caller line in Auburn, Indiana on Coast to Coast for Dr. Lynn Kitai. Bob?
Yes, hi. I was just wondering if there had been any reported sightings around Wichita at the same time as Phoenix.
Did you hear about any?
I was camping just northeast of Wichita and saw a red orb.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well,
but what was more
happening? If people get on to the UFO reporting center in Seattle, Washington, you'd just be amazed. I mean, most things can be explained again, but there are so many reports every single day of similar phenomena happening that it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. So people are starting to look up. I always say, keep looking up. People are looking up now. People are noticing and looking and aren't afraid to take pictures and to really look in the skies, because if you start looking, I promise you'll start finding.
I understand that. Bill's in Michigan on Coast to Coast for Dr. Lynn Kitai on Coast to Coast. Bill?
Thanks for taking my call. First of all, Ian, I'd like to congratulate you on a great run on Coast to Coast. What's it been, about 12 years?
Something like that. Yeah, about the time of the Phoenix Lights. Still almost as long.
My question, I've only heard it intermittent pieces of your broadcast tonight, so I hope I'm not redundant. Were the lights like in a wing, or was it a solid triangle sort of an object?
Okay, again, many people saw different things. The majority of people saw lights rock solid in an equidistant formation, massive span, a mile to a two-mile wide, that these lights seemed to be attached to something, whether there was a force field in between or they were separate objects, we may never know. But there were also a number of reports, and we have a 911 police operator, not only describes in the book, in the expanded version, the new book, also in the documentary, that they got hundreds of calls at the where they said they only got a few, and she just retired and said, you know, how would you like me to share what really happened? They got hundreds of calls, and there were a number of people who actually saw a craft, and they saw these lights were huge, massive lights, like a circle of lights, kind of like water inside, or spinning balls of energy within like a canister in a craft. And if you take a look at the Phoenix Lights Network, phoenixlights.net, on the GAP page, GAP, Geospatial Animation Project, you will see a number of different craft that people were seeing statewide. So there were many things going on. There was a parade throughout the state on March 13th, 1997, and I'm so glad that we're able to share that with people. As the caller said before, it wasn't just one or two events. There were many events.
How much time has been spent either translating or interviewing the people in Mexico, in northern Mexico, that also had a similar experience. Has that been coordinated and collated, that information?
Actually, Jaime Musan, who I was presenting with a couple years ago in Italy, is very prominent in Mexico. In fact, their sightings really started up big time during the eclipse. It seems when there is something going on in the sky, and we know that the Fatima sightings are now said to be have UFOs. But in 1991, there was an eclipse in Mexico, and a number of people were out there with their cameras, and they also caught UFOs. And they converged on Jaime Musan, who was like the Dan Rather of a 60-minute show down there, and he knew nothing about this topic like myself, and it sucked him in, as it did me, in learning more about it. And when he started to investigate it, he too was just overwhelmed with the plethora of compelling and credible data out there, and now he's one of the people on the forefront of lecturing worldwide and collecting videos and pictures from people throughout Mexico. So yes, they actually work with the university on this, which is wonderful. I mean, they really are much more open to discuss and to analyze and to really get this out in the open.
Stephen's in Tennessee for on a wild card line on Coast to Coast for Dr. Lynn Kitai. Stephen?
Hi there. How are you?
Doing great.
Great. I wanted to relay an experience that I had. My friends, they got a house on a ridge that was grandfathered into the Smoky Mountain National Park, into the Tennessee Valley. And they kept telling us about these experiences of these, the canisters would go by, the orbs, and also the triangles. And me and a bunch of my friends are all really skeptical to the whole thing. So they invited us there to check this whole thing out. And so they just pretty much have a party. We all go out there. About 2 o'clock in the morning, their kids run in and say, "Mom, they're here, they're here." And so we all run outside, and we see three of the orbs go by. And then right after that, there were two different triangles, probably 10 minutes later. And then right after that, there were, it looked like way at a very high altitude, some fighter jets going really fast. Mm-hmm. And they were leaving the direction of the Oak Ridge nuclear facility. It looked like where they were coming from. And I was wondering if the nuclear facilities had anything to do with, if they were attracted to the nuclear facilities for some reason.
You brought up a great point. And yes, these orbs have been seen numerous times hovering above nuclear facilities. And in fact, in the 60s, in the Mastrom incident, where there were nuclear silos 30 miles apart, and one didn't know what was happening at the other one, there were actually UFOs at the gate, and suddenly everything went offline, and you cannot turn the missiles off, but everything went offline for several hours, and then suddenly they went on again. So you wonder, you know, what kind of a message is that? If these phenomena are hovering around nuclear bases, and in that instance, in the 60s, and I talk about it in the book, the whole nuclear facility was stopped. Everything just stopped, and that's very telling in itself. So yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. What did you say right at the beginning too? Not only the jets. There is a story that we have now in the book, which is I think very, very poignant in and of itself. A commercial airline was going from Phoenix to California, and just as they were getting close to Vegas, they happened to notice this triangular formation of lights that seemed to cover the whole strip in Vegas, and they called in to see if anybody was getting any kind of correspondence or radar feed, and were told that there wasn't anything. And then suddenly another airline pilot called in, and he was all frantic, "What is that?" and asking them to give an explanation. And then suddenly another voice, male voice, came on the line. and said, you know, tell me right now what you were seeing, describe it in detail. And it kind of freaked out the pilots, and they said, you know, we don't see it anymore. And they kept on traveling towards California, and they were about 33,000 feet, and they were about a half hour away from their destination, and suddenly there was a giant flare about a mile away that suddenly was deployed, and it was pretty close, too close for comfort, which they thought was very strange. And then suddenly, within minutes, there was a military jet on full afterburners about a half a mile from them. In fact, one of the pilots almost jumped out of their seat. And, you know, to them, it seemed very evident that somebody was trying to quiet them.
Very interesting.
So, yeah.
And nobody's ever tried to quiet you?
Actually, I've been very fortunate. I mean, I'm just trying to do a job as a scientist and an educator and also as a healer. And hopefully the powers to be just know that I'm just trying to help in a gentle way to impart the data, and people can make up their own minds. I've been very fortunate, and I've met with a number of military and inside people. I've spoken at inside conferences, the X conference in Washington, D.C., and so forth. So, you know, they know what I'm about, and I'm just trying to help. So hopefully they'll continue to let me do that.
But you've never gotten the visit from the from somebody which would be classified as a man in black, or has anybody that your husband or anybody else ever gotten anything where they felt like they were being intimidated?
No. Good. I have to say that, you know, my experience has been very positive all the way around, and that's why, you know, you asked earlier, why don't I get regressed? Well, you know, I don't really see the necessity in it. I've had a very enlightening experience my whole life. We've got to get you the book.
Right.
So there's much more to this story, and I think you'll appreciate it even more after you read the book. But I really feel blessed. Doing this now. I think that, you know, it's something that I've been inspired to do for whatever reason, and if I can lend my expertise to impart the data in a credible and professional way, then I'm more than happy to do that.
If you had to sum up in 20, 30 seconds what you think the message of the Phoenix Lights is supposed to be to us, how would you describe that message?
I think the most important thing at this point is that we become aware as a civilization that we're not alone in the universe, that there may very well be life teeming out there that's just waiting for our consciousness to raise enough to accept the possibilities. And I think that these visitations, these friendly visitations, and again, there has not been one report in 13 years of harm, threat, or abduction associated with the Phoenix Lights, and it sounds like many other people from your callers alone are seeing the same phenomena, very similar phenomena throughout the United States and certainly throughout the world, are trying to wake us up to their presence, and also that we have so much positive potential as human beings, and we need to get back to that.
All right. Very good. Well, and start by getting real about what happened back on March 13th, 1997. Find out more by going to the website at coasttocoastam.com. Thank you, Doctor, for your time, and look forward to continuing the conversation into the future with the next sighting. Drive carefully, Pat. Your father will know you're there even if he doesn't speak. Deus te amat, and I do too.